Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening. This episode of Command Control Power is brought to you commercial-free and is made possible by our Patreon sponsors. You can help bring more commercial-free episodes by going to patreon.com/cmdctrlpwr and supporting the show with a monthly pledge. Thank you for your support of Command Control Power. We are very pleased to be joined this week by Matt Westhoff of Foundation in Minneapolis. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So you have a really impressive bio. Your company was on the Inc. 5000 list last year. I guess you're expecting to be back on this year. You mentioned your number 3385, so not too far down the list either. Pretty impressive. You're a big company with lots of clients. You've done lots of large-scale mobility deployments and wireless deployments. So I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of that. But going back much farther, you used to be a senior manager with Apple. And how did you get into this whole consulting business?
It was an interesting thing, I guess. So one of the kind of my right hand at Foundation worked at Apple as a business specialist. And she was in this store and said, "Hey, I need a partner in crime at my new gig. And I know you've been looking," because it was at a time in my life where I was, for Apple, I had a lovely job, I loved it, but I traveled a lot. I was a visual merchandising mentor, which meant that I had the pleasure of opening or remodeling 33 stores for Apple Retail.
Wow.
It was a blast, but I didn't really sleep a whole lot because I would often fly in on a Thursday and work basically nonstop until Sunday and then fly back and then still have to work in the store for a couple of days.
Wow.
So it was an adventure, but I got married, had a kid, and decided that was not the life I wanted anymore. And the stars aligned, and Jim Wolford, our CEO, and I chatted for probably about 45 minutes, of which I spoke probably 10 minutes, and it just clicked. And that was 5 years ago, and it feels like yesterday.
When you were doing the design development, were you executing somebody else's ideas, or did you have marching orders and you would just be there to execute them, or were you actually invited to come up with your own input?
Well, it's Apple, so you're not really invited to do anything on your own to a certain extent. I say that joking because a lot of the fun part of my job was working with the visual team in Cupertino and giving feedback and talking about how the stores are merchandised and how to zip tie cables better and things like that. My role for a lot of what I did out in the field when I wasn't in the store was training people how to do it. So we had a reputation at some of the stores that I worked at full time for having some of the most perfect stores from a visual merchandising standpoint. I remember at one time our regional director came by, and the only thing that she had the opportunity to complain about from a look and feel standpoint for the store was that there was dust on the fire extinguisher. And to me,
that's a good sign though, right?
That was a pretty big win. And I felt really good about that. So a lot of it was more mentorship and training on cable management, visual design, and how to follow the guidelines that Apple gives you, as opposed to, let's go make something up. Now, part of that was I got to help participate with a very, very smart team in Cupertino who are experts at visual merchandising and really, give them some in-store perspective as what works for us as employees versus just what's going on from a consumer perspective. So there's some really good collaboration that they involved us with, but for the most part, there were definitely marching orders to follow.
It does seem like most Apple stores are, I wouldn't say cookie cutter, but there's a lot of consistency from store to store, at least there should be. But are there a lot of, variants to that? Like I'm thinking of some of the local stores where, Apple takes over an existing, maybe historic building or something like that. Yeah. How do you incorporate, existing features and architecture into the visual design of the, merchandising part of things?
Well, and that's, one of the, I guess it was the both amazing and stressful parts of being part of that process. In Minneapolis, we have 5 stores and most of them are fairly cookie cutter to a certain extent. at least now they are, except for one of them. And, you know, there are really a couple of different store designs, or at least there were at the time. And, you know, this was 5 years ago, so things have evolved and changed, and I don't know what the latest is and all of that. But to a certain extent, you know, there were 22-foot stores, there were 30-foot stores, 45-foot stores, and flagships. And that's just referencing how wide the storefront is. Mm-hmm. But amongst all of those, you know, at the time, there were, I think, maybe 350 stores, but there were probably 125 floor plans. Wow. So there's a whole lot of variation, but there are bits and pieces that come with. Like, there's always an accessories section, there's always a software section, and you kind of get the flow. And honestly, part of my job at the time was to help make sure that people understood what their footprint was and understand that they're this particular style. So as far as how Apple integrates into some of the existing structures, things like that, you know, I'm in Minnesota. We don't have any fancy landmarks or fancy buildings to a certain extent. We just have snow. So I didn't really get to participate in a lot of that.
So 5 years ago or so, what were the sort of oddball products in the Apple lineup that you had to find a place for in the store that didn't seem to fit with the rest of the lineup? Were there those? I'm thinking like Mac Mini these days, and, you know, Mac, even like to some extent, you know, Apple TV is kind of a weird little part of the store.
Yeah.
What comes to mind for you there?
What was really weird for me is I started when the iPod was in its second or I think it was third generation. And I actually, you know, I started as a part-time specialist, but my gig at the time, my life, I guess, was I was a Mac user. And I still remember the first day. It was pre-training because they just needed somebody on the floor to stand there and say yes and no and look at signs and stuff, which they don't do anymore, which is amazing. But I learned really fast what an iPod was because I had no idea. I wanted to go stand by the Mac Pros, but they didn't, or I guess Power Macs at the time. Mm-hmm. But they didn't really believe that that's where I could fit in. And no fault to anybody there. You know, they were great, but in general, it's easier to pick up what an iPod does than what a Power Mac does. But I lived through the launch of the iPhones, all different variants, and there were some wonderful war stories there that I'm probably not going to be able to talk about or shouldn't. But I think as far as current day, the things I would not want to merchandise, honestly, it's the Apple Watch, just from like a user experience standpoint. The only way to get somebody to really engage with it is to have them try it on and showcase it and let them look and feel and see what it does, which presents a real challenge in a store situation. Even if you think about silly things like how to charge it, like how do you charge 24 Apple Watches in a store? That's a tough problem to solve. Other things that were always interesting and kind of have obviously improved as the other technologies have improved, things like imaging iPods and iPhones, that was a tough process. I don't know what it's like today. I know that in general, the marketplace for imaging iPhones and iPods and iPads has gotten way better. As Foundation, we've deployed, I think, 60,000 iOS devices now, and we couldn't do it with things like MDM or ground control or some of the other tools out there. And a lot of that, you know, didn't exist back then. Like, we were trying to figure out how to make it faster by using Apple scripts and the configurator one and things like that. So I think it would be really interesting to peek into what Visuals is like nowadays, but I'm also really happy not having anything to do with it.
So what made you move on? I mean, it sounds in some ways to a lot of people listening, that would sound like a dream job. You know, you're getting into, you're rolling up your sleeves and getting into a little bit of the technical end of deploying these stores. And how did you come to the Foundation?
Well, a lot of it was honestly work-life balance. And, you know, we had a kid, and I think we were at that time planning on having our second. We've got three now, so I'm going to preemptively apologize if any of them come upstairs and scream into the microphone, because I'm surprised we've lasted this long, to be honest. But a lot of it was just 8 to 5 to a certain extent. Like, we're 24/7 as an organization, but my particular role lets me be far more 8 to 5, unless you ask my wife, which then she'd chime in. It's more like 24/7 based on Slack and some other things. So, you know, I think work-life balance was the big thing. But if I was a, you know, 24-year-old single dude and could go travel around and open Apple stores, yeah, I'd totally do that. But I'm a 30-something dad belly with three kids, and it's I'm too old for that. Get off my lawn.
So, Matt, you're a director of business development and operations at Foundation.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier, I think, that you're not really a tech. You don't fancy yourself a tech. And yet, I think for, you know, as a business development director, I'm sure tech comes into play. I mean, you have to know how to speak the language at least.
Oh, yeah.
And you certainly sound, you know, technical in speaking with you now. So how do you kind of bridge that gap between, you know, this quote unquote sales guy versus the tech?
Yeah. And it's been a very interesting 5 years. Like when I started, and when I left Apple, I felt like I knew everything about Apple. I knew every make and model, what the processor speeds and all that stuff was, and I could speak the language no problem. Then I got into the real world outside of the Apple Kool-Aid, and holy cow, I did not know anything. And I had to pick it up quick, because one of the things that I've learned over my time is that as a consultant, very little or the things that we support on a daily basis are not very often the Macs themselves. It's the software or it's the network behind it more than anything else. And that's the stuff where, you know, I spent a lot of time learning. And, you know, my first probably 2 to 3 weeks on the job was mostly, there was no sales trainer. So it was conversations with our techs and asking questions, going to every implementation meeting I could and just learning about what they dealt with on a daily basis. And that was probably some of my more stressful months was this, I don't really know what I'm doing and I'm not necessarily going to make it up, but I've got a lot of questions to ask a lot of people, which was great. And I think that's probably the best way for at least us as an organization to really evaluate that. But one of the things that is really interesting or unique about Foundation is that we're a pretty large organization when it comes to being an ACN. We got 22 headcount right now, and the majority of those folks are on the technical side. So we've got 12 field techs that are typical, well, not really, I wouldn't say typical, but they're what you would think of as a typical ACN. So managing Macs, PCs, networks, firewalls, that kind of stuff. Then we've got a couple of guys on the help desk, and then we've got a wireless engineer who's dedicated and all he does is Wi-Fi basically all day long. And then a couple of guys that are very focused on the mobile side. So iPad deployments, Android deployments. We actually did a deployment for Radisson's that involved like 200 Windows RT tablets, which was a horrendously scary project to say the least. Not only just because of this sheer geography, like we were shipping and our clients were in Japan and Europe and just all over the place. And then we also had to, on top of it, work with Windows RT and using AirWatch to manage them. So it was an interesting little time there, but we survived. And I think all the locations enjoyed using it as a tool and continue to do so. So we're kind of a unique, I guess, like I was saying, and I guess my point was that we don't really have a whole lot in terms of a sales team. It's really myself kind of on the front end of it, and then Stacy, who's basically my right hand, but she does a lot of the client services, and honestly, she's more director of operations than anything else. Like, she should have that portion of my title because I do a very bad job at it. And then I've got Jeff, who's my enterprise account rep who handles kind of the big accounts. So Great Clips is an account of ours. We manage the 4,000 locations in US and Canada for their wireless networks, their credit card terminals, and some other stuff. That particular project was initially talked about probably 4 years ago with them, and then we really kind of cranked all of the networks out and all the wireless routers out last year in 8-month window, which was a very busy 8 months for us.
Wow. So you mentioned you have a wireless engineer on staff. Is that just a lot of rebooting airport extremes, or what's what's his day-to-day like? What in all seriousness, what kind of networks are you managing? Can you talk about vendors that you prefer?
Yeah, so we're kind of agnostic. One of the things that we learned a long time ago is that if you're in the business to resell hardware and software, you're going to lose money in closed shop. So we really focus on the service end of it. And one of the really interesting things about Wi-Fi is just the fact that it's all radio waves, and there are certain things that are completely standard about how a wireless signal gets from point A to point B. It's kind of like an MDM to a certain extent, but the vendors all are very similar. It's just what feature sets they have and where the buttons are to push. The big ones that we work with are Aerohive. We've got a bunch of that out in the field, and Meraki has been kind of up and coming. We're actually about to, hopefully, depending on if I actually finish what I need to do, going to start offering network as a service where our customers can basically rent firewalls, switching, and APs, which would be a full Meraki stack from us, and make that an operational cost as opposed to a capital investment. So for somebody who's opening a new office or they just need all new gear, instead of spending $14,000, they are going to end up spending $800 a month for X amount. And then we manage it, we monitor it, and do lifecycle management when appropriate. So we also do a lot with Ubiquiti, and obviously a lot of our smaller companies that we work with, you know, they're honestly still in airports. But what he does on a day-to-day basis, we throw him at the hard stuff. So complex authentication, where it needs to be profile sent down to the Mac to get a certificate, and then they also need radius authentication at the AP at layer 7. So he handles a lot of the more complex or the more compliant type situations, and then just wireless design for crazy things. So good example is, for the last couple of years, we did an event at a theater in town called Pantages, which holds about 900 people. And one of the big companies in town here has historically held an event there for about 700 of their salespeople. And the event is something where they all get to vote and ask questions via an iOS app. Well, the Pantages has a T1 for connectivity. So every year we get called in to drop in a new circuit, put in a switch stack, and light up APs to cover those 700 to 800 devices for a 2-day period, and make sure that at any point in time, the wireless is rock solid so that they don't have to worry about the experience of their sales staff and being able to ask questions. So we get called in to do some crazy stuff, to say the least. One of my favorite clients in town is a place called Coco, which is a co-working space. They've got a handful of locations in Minneapolis and one in Chicago now. And they have very unique spaces. One of them in Minneapolis is called the Grain Exchange, which is literally like an old stock market looking spot that used to be where grain exchanged. So it was the stock market for grain, essentially. And, you know, it's 40-foot ceilings with crazy nice plaster crown moldings and metal beams everywhere. And it's probably a wireless nightmare by itself. But then you throw in the fact that they on average have about 300 people there with usually about 2 to 3 devices per person on top of it. So making that work, because one of their big things is at their space, they have to have 2 things at all time, and that's coffee and internet. And if they don't have either one of them, their members go crazy, and that's a big problem for them. So we get called in for some of that unique and hard to figure out stuff.
What would you say is your ideal customer for the foundation? Or let me rephrase that. What would be the smallest size customer you would potentially take on that you would think would be a good match?
Like, we actually have a bunch of individual shops per se. So a lot of freelancers and whatnot. But on average, I would say where we really find our groove for the land services stuff, it's really at the 5 to 75 mark. We've got a bunch of clients that are larger and a bunch of clients that are smaller, but that's kind of the sweet spot. And I know that's pretty broad, but I think the most important part about that is that of all of our clients, probably 60 to 70% of them are in what I'd call the creative field. So ad agencies, designers, strategic communications, like PR folks. And that's kind of the majority of the folks that we get to work with. Another big segment is actually architecture firms. And part of that is because one of our techs, who's been with us for 15 years, used to be an architect and knows everybody in the community. He, you know, he's a brilliant guy from an architecture standpoint. He got his master's in architecture from Harvard, and apparently one day he just decided to be a nerd and hang out with the computers and made them all work. And that's what he's been doing for us for 15 years. So what we find really interesting in comparison to a lot of the other shops that we kind of bump into is a lot of my techs are very creative people, and I don't know that any of them actually went to school for computer science or anything like that. One of our guys, as a hobby and as a kind of a side gig, actually designs furniture and went to RISD, and he's a professional furniture builder, and he moonlights for Foundation as an IT guy. So I think a lot of where we find success is actually because of the people that we have on staff who aren't your typical go hide in a closet, make sure that the backups are working, and don't really talk to anybody. Our guys are a little bit more social and easier to talk to, and a lot of them at one point worked for an agency and just decided that, you know, they weren't good designers, so maybe they should fix the server. Stuff like that, which is sadly a pretty common occurrence in Minneapolis, which is a pretty good advertising market, believe it or not.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is indeed a broad range, and I was surprised to hear that you know, do work with smaller teams or individuals. If you had to give advice to, since you're in charge of new business development, for the average consultant that might be listening to this show, What kind of general tricks of the trade or tips might you give us to find some new work?
Well,
because I'll tell you, just, you know, personally, you know, I find that if in most cases, if they're not looking for you, it's a real hard sell.
Yeah. Try having the name Foundation. We basically get 90, I think we did the math one point, we get 97 or 98% of our new business from referrals, and the other 3% is just plain old dumb luck. Somebody actually found us on the internet.
Right.
And having a name like Foundation, you know, most people think we're a nonprofit, and right, we are definitely not a nonprofit. But, you know, getting to your question in terms of advice and how to really grow the business, you know, I think a lot of it just comes down to taking really good care of your customers. And that's something that we continually ask ourselves from the account side, because from a tech perspective, probably a little bit different than most ACNs, in that we bill everything hourly. We don't have any fixed rate. We don't have any service plans to a certain extent.
Wow.
What we do have is our customers who are what most people would call on retainer, they basically commit to saying, all right, I'm going to buy 8 hours a month. I'm going to buy 10 hours a month or whatever. And then we've got a set of rates that are associated with those different tiers. So somebody buys 4 hours a month, they get a discounted rate from our time and materials rate. But somebody who buys 30 hours a month gets an even bigger discount because they're investing more in what we do.
So is that what you call a retainer client if they're committing to a certain number of hours per month?
Yeah, we think of it as a maintenance client where we're actively maintaining the network. A lot of that's through some automation. A lot of it is reliant on best practices that we've established. We've got one product that we try and lead every engagement with. It's called an Orange Book, where we basically provide a new client or even a prospect. It's a paid product, too. We basically come in, we do an inventory of all of their technology, we do a assessment of that technology, provide them a report of everything that they have, and recommendations and budgetary numbers for what we see for the next 2-3 years of their life cycle. This helps, one, solidify the relationship with them and us and say, hey, we know that you're taking a gamble on moving to a new IT company, we're taking on a new client, and the best way to do that is to learn everything we can about the network. The more info we have, the better and faster we're going to be able to service you. And oh, by the way, these are some things that you should be looking at in the next 2-3 years. I've had a lot of Orange Books in my 5 years, and I can only remember one that paid for an Orange Book and was like, yep, okay, great, we're going to go with somebody else.
Right. It sounds like a great way to demonstrate the value of your company, just the fact that it's so comprehensive and just demonstrates, yep. you know, what you've learned and the kinds of recommendations you can, you know, offer them. And not to mention the budgeting aspect of things must be really helpful for a lot of companies that probably aren't used to actually dealing with a real legitimate budget for this stuff. And they just kind of wing it most of the time, right?
Yeah, well, and especially for companies that are 50 or below, usually the person that we're interacting with is the CFO or a director of operations or somebody who's more in a operational or financial mindset that has this task of go find somebody to fix our computers and make sure it's cost effective. And so for them, a lot of times hearing that we're helping plan out the next couple of years, and part of the conversation is not just, okay, how old are your Macs, but it's also, are you guys planning to move? What's your growth look like? Are you going to grow 400% in the next 2 years? Because that drastically changes what we may recommend from a technology spend. So a lot of it is us acting as a business partner and really saying, hey, we want to help you grow and we'll do what we can to get you there. Our venue for that is technology. And I think what hopefully our clients all understand is that if we can help them grow, then that does nothing but good things for us. I would love it if a client actually got too big for us and decided to hire somebody on staff, because that means we've set them up for success. They've grown and are doing well in the business world and can subside by having an on-site person. What's really funny is a lot of the clients that we get to that point who are at the 75 to 100 headcount range often love their primary tech so much and love foundation that they choose not to hire somebody, even though it's more expensive to keep us on staff.
Right. You guys are a known quantity and you're bringing a lot to the table versus, you know, I mean, how do you find someone with the same level of quality, even if they're, you know, paying somebody full time for that to just be there every day? You may get somebody there every day who, you know, doesn't know half the stuff that your primary tech knows.
Right. Well, and, you know, a lot of what we do too. So a lot of our field guys are at our clients. And one thing that we absolutely believe in is for anybody who's in a maintenance agreement with us in Minneapolis is that we have to see them monthly at a minimum. It doesn't matter if they're 8 people or 80 people. Like, we have to show up, show our face, and walk around and see how things are going. Because you can do as much as you want in an automated fashion. You can make everything as smooth as humanly possible and just fly under the radar. But you also have to be known at a certain point. Like, our techs are part of our clients' families for a lot of them because they're part of the culture. They know that Patrick's coming by on Tuesday or Derek's swinging by on Thursdays or whatever that is. And at that moment when they walk by just to check in with everybody, it's inevitable that somebody's like, oh, hey, I've been having this printer thing. Can you take a look at it? Which, if you're just sitting there doing things remotely or it's a help desk, it's not impossible to catch those things, but it's a little bit different in how you get to that in an expedient fashion.
Yeah, FaceTime is definitely important. And we've talked in the past about how that level of just ease, you know, you're putting your tech right in front of the client and they can't help but think about technical issues. Whereas, like you said, remote, you know, you're a little bit more behind the scenes. It doesn't always bubble up to the surface. Not to mention the personal relationship is really important also to cement the business relationship.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, what I think is, it's a double-edged sword to a certain extent. Like, I fully trust all of our field techs to own their relationship with their clients. But because of that, I only check in with them on a quarterly or every 6 month basis from kind of the account manager side, which helps me be able to take on more clients. But at the same time, am I doing a disservice by not providing another voice or another outlet for them to talk to? So that's something that we're constantly reevaluating. And I think, you know, going back to what would you say to other ACNs out there, you have to be able to be nimble and change quite a bit. We didn't have a mobility team 3 or 4 years ago, and we didn't have a wireless engineer until like 2, maybe 3 years ago. But those are now huge parts of our business because we rolled the dice. And, you know, we've got a couple of retail clients who pay us thousands of dollars a month because we are their help desk for 1,000 iPads that they have across the US. And when somebody has an issue, they call us as opposed to somebody on their internal IT staff. So it was kind of a new venue for us to go down, but you know, it's provided mobile and wireless last year represented 60% of our business, is my guess.
Wow.
Where the LAN, the traditional ACN stuff, was that other 40%. But when you look at efficiency standpoint, my headcount on the mobility side and the wireless side is about a third of what it is on the LAN side. So those kind of roll the dice chances, it's a tough thing to do, but if you have a team that you trust and they're ready to grow into something else, there's no reason not to try it. Like my wireless guy actually started in our repair depot because we're a AASP, and as did the wireless engineer before that, who now works for Target as a senior wireless engineer and is a brilliant guy, and I'm extremely happy for him. But they both started in our depot repairing Macs and were like, hey, we keep getting asked these questions. Maybe I'm going to take some time and learn this stuff. And then over time, they both became extremely smart and it became a huge pillar of our business. Same thing on the mobile side. Like, how are we going to manage all these iPads? All right, well, somebody learned AirWatch. Somebody learned MobileIron. Somebody dive in and figure it out.
So is it a lot of self-starters like that, that you can kind of identify on an operational level and realize that these individuals bring a lot of, value to the team, and then you can kind of like maybe build a department around them?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I'm really proud of for all of our team is that we've all really got skin in the game. Like, nobody's just showing up to do the job. Everybody knows that because, you know, we may be a bigger company in the world of ACNs, but we're still 22 people. Like, we're a small organization in the grand scheme of business. And going up or down one headcount affects all of us. So being able to invest in our people has been a huge part of it, and being able to reward them too. Like, we all had a great year last year. Because of that, everybody got rewarded at the end of the year. Like, we had a very good year. But, this year, it's not as good as last year. Everybody kind of feels that, but everybody just kind of buckles down is that personal entrepreneur enough to say, yep, I'm just going to keep working at it, and I'm going to keep thinking about it and see what the people in front of us on a daily basis are asking for.
What I'm hearing too, Matt, too, is just you describing your organization. You cast this really wide net, and when people come up to you and maybe approach you to take on something which you may, in an area that you may not have explored before, it sounds like the company's dynamic enough where we're like, sure, we can do that, and then you just take it on.
Yeah, I would agree with that to a certain extent, because there are, like, we always are very clear with our clients that there are certain things that we will never do, and one of the biggest is be a VoIP company. I don't ever want to deal with a phone system. And I don't think anybody else really does either. But we're not going to host anything either. We used to have a hosted Carrio solution as a product. We hosted Carrio for our clients.
You're singing Joe's song right now.
Yeah, well, one of the best decisions we ever made was to turn that thing off and move our clients to Google Apps, 365, their own Carrio, whatever made sense for them. But we realized that we were spending too much time taking care of ourselves and our infrastructure, that we weren't spending enough time with our clients and taking care of them. So we made a conscious decision that, we would never be hosting anything for our clients really ever again. And we are a service-based group. If, we're resellers for X, Y, and Z, but that's more of a nice to have for our clients than a need to have. We're an Apple reseller, and being an Apple reseller today is a very interesting landscape. And I think one of the best decisions we ever made was to refer things to the Apple stores for certain situations, because there's no margin in hardware or software that will keep you afloat. I think First Tech in Minneapolis is a great testament of that. They were in one of the first Apple resellers, TechServe as well, both kind of stepping away from the retail. First Tech closed almost a year and a half ago now. And if you just focus on hardware software, you can't survive in the current state. So where we really kind of try and focus is the services side of it. And growing what that looks like. Part of that is looking at things a little bit differently, like the network as a service is one thing. We're probably about to roll out, again, if I get the marketing stuff done, automated patch management and monitoring stuff based on some tools that sponsor you. And we've always had those kind of as ideas and whatnot, but we're at a place now where it's like, okay, well, if we don't do some new things from a competitive landscape, we might just start to see some clients go away just because it's cheaper elsewhere.
If I could ask you, Matt, how does that fit into your, you know, your service offerings from the standpoint of like your, I guess you're billing hourly or you know, maintenance contracts as opposed to managed services, so you don't have that kind of subscription level service in your offering now. Like, how do you see that fitting into just from the business side of things, billing purposes?
Well, and that's where we're going to tread lightly, I think. And, you know, I think that for us, the biggest thing is always been keeping them as separate products. So network as a service, patch management, and all those things, those are more products that we offer, but our services will all be in addition to that. So if an alarm goes off, just like it does now, and it triggers a ticket, that's a billable event. But if the automated side of the patch management reduces my tech's overhead by 2 to 3 hours a month, I'm not necessarily heartbroken about that, because it lets them focus on the bigger projects. It lets them focus on the server installs and what's best for the company, as opposed to kind of the day-to-day desktop management. So I think we're going to be better consultants because of having some of these automated tools in our back pocket.
That makes
sense.
It's
not going to be for everybody, but it's going to be for some folks who are interested in the automated side of it. And I think anybody who does the MSP model knows that there are projects that come up. There are things that will keep you going as additional revenue. Our perspective on that is just the flipped. We think of the automated stuff as additional revenue that also helps us be better technicians.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's very few kind of, it's not really a black or white thing. I think there's one company I can think of that has a basically fully managed services sort of business where, you know, it's really truly all in. I mean, there's no such thing as a project, but that's I think they're the exception. You know, as you described, it might be somewhere between, you know, it might be a 90-10 or 80-20 split either side, but it's a hybrid for most people, I think, for most companies.
Yeah. Well, and I think where we're really excited is if we start doing some of those things, and some of the idea behind it is we can start taking on some of those smaller clients, and as we help support them and as we hopefully are good stewards of their business, they start to grow if that's what they want to do. And then they become more and more of a maintenance client beyond just the automated side of it. And they want to have a tech show up once a month, if not more than that. And I think that's where we really see ourselves. So our motto is get back to work, which everybody kind of snickers at because it's kind of a mean thing to say, but that's our mantra. That's our whole purpose, is so that our clients can do the work that they're good at, and we'll take care of the other junk that nobody wants to deal with. Like, that's why we exist. Nobody actually wants to take care of updating Adobe. They want somebody else to do it. They just want to design. And I think that's where we found a lot of our success is really just helping folks focus on what they do best and realize that there's some things they could spend better time on.
Right. So around that sort of, dare I say, foundational sort of, belief, you have, you know, a very vertically integrated company. It's you have the, you know, desktop support, you know, obviously mobility, wireless support, and networking in general. And then, as you mentioned, you're an AASP and then an
yep.
Apple reseller.
Yep.
So you kind of, you know, you kind of can do it all for your clients. And I guess that's all to serve that purpose of, you know, making sure that you the tech gets out of the way and you take care of all that stuff and let them get back to work.
Yep, exactly.
So
exactly.
The Apple reseller side you mentioned briefly, but can you talk more about the types of, you know, sales that you might direct to the Apple store versus the ones that you might keep in-house and why?
That's a tough one, because we have metrics to meet as Apple resellers, which we've never had an issue meeting. But a lot of our clients their owners or partners or whomever go to Apple stores because they go to Apple stores and they need their iPhone fixed or something like that. That's all well and good. And what has been a little tough for us to swallow at times is some of our bigger clients. Allianz Life is a big client of ours, which is a little weird that they're one where we kind of work with their IT department and take care of the 40 or so Macs that they have of the thousands of computers. They just didn't want to deal with the Macs, but we used to sell them all their Macs. But Apple was smart and is starting to build their customers' sales portals so that one of their customers can log in, basically make an online purchase, get their business discount or whatever they want to call it, loyalty, I don't even remember what it is now, and then give them 30-day terms, and it shows up. That's actually one that we lost, and it was a little hard because it was significant revenue, but at the same time, it doesn't do us any good to fight for a little bit of profit. I would rather them as an organization be happy and make their purchasing smoother, because that then allows us to do our jobs better because they have newer machines faster, and it also doesn't take as much time as an internal team to help process those orders. Now, from where we spend a little bit more time and more focus on the reseller aspect of it is actually on the mobile side. So if somebody comes to us and they want, hey, I need 500 iPads and I need them to be managed and things like that, that's not one where a partner or somebody walks into an Apple store, usually, sometimes, but not usually, and says, hey, I need 500 iPads. Usually that's a little bit more thought out than just walking in and buying something. So it's kind of a give and take. The good thing is, coming from the Apple stores, I know all the Apple stores. I've got good relationships with all their management teams, all their business teams. So there are certain things that, you know, we work together on, and being able to be a referral partner for them as an ACN has probably netted us more business than the sales that we've lost to them in hardware.
That's a good way to look at it.
Well, and honestly, it's something where in 2 years, we very well may not be resellers because there's just not a point anymore. And we've kind of come to terms with that and accepted it because it's just the nature of how business has changed.
And that's a good perspective to have. I mean, I think a lot of ACNs have thought about, you know, how great it would be to be able to sell Apple products, and then, you know, then an Apple reseller kind of sets them straight and says, you know, you should see the margins on this stuff. I wish that there were a way as an ACN for me to place an order on a client's behalf, maybe with like net 30 terms. Like, I could almost be like a reseller. Without actually taking possession of any equipment, or maybe it would ship to my office, but I wouldn't keep inventory.
You kind of can, to a certain extent, for anybody who has, any of your clients who have a relationship with Apple Business and have that sales portal, they can actually, if they're willing to give you a account on their domain, they can make you a, can't remember the term, what they call it, but it's basically a authorized proposer. They still have to approve it, but you basically create a proposal in their portal with your creds on their domain, and then they approve it, and the purchase goes through Apple, and the ACN referral thing that I don't know too much about because I'm a reseller kicks into effect.
Oh, interesting. So it's a hybrid of both of those programs, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. And I, so I'm on the ACN council as well, which is pretty neat. And I think there's more to come on that particular topic in the next couple of months. But it's definitely something where Apple's listening to ACNs and trying to find ways to make it a little easier for us as ACNs to let our clients invest in Apple gear.
Interesting. I will talk to you on the next call in a few weeks. I didn't realize you were a council member. I didn't put it together yet. Nice to make that connection. A fellow council member, I should say.
Happy to bring you guys together tonight.
Yes, thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. I'm Matt from Minnesota.
What, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, it's pretty fun, you know, after doing this for so long to have that that level of relationship with Apple, kind of for the same reasons you were talking about earlier, where like, as you mentioned in the Apple Store, you know, you brought a perspective of kind of telling Apple what the customers see, and, you know, how that works from the Apple employee perspective. At the same time, you kind of bridge that gap for Apple. And I think that's what the council can help to do as well, you know, just to bring that up to the surface for the ACN management. So it's an honor to serve on the council, and I'll be looking for you next call. So it's a really interesting perspective on your whole organization here. I had another question about just how do you sort of retain talent? You know, you mentioned that the techs become such a member of the family with some of your clients, and obviously they form that personal relationship. And, you know, you also mentioned, you know, you're happy for them if they move on, but of course, you know, you want to keep them happy working for Foundation so that they don't get, you know, don't want to stray too far too soon. They can provide value to you, and you can, of course, provide a good home for them. So how do you make that work?
In general, one of the things that I love about Foundation is our average tenure is kind of nutty. We've got one guy who's been with us for the entire 16 years, somebody who has been with us for 14 years. Somebody's been with us for 13 years, except he did 6 months at a different company and hated life and came back. And they're kind of the core group that really started to help grow things. And then I think we've got a 6 year and a couple other 5 years, four, and then the new growth, as I would call it. Retaining talent's always a hard thing. One of the ways that we try and do that, and I hope we do it successfully, is giving them really a lot of flexibility. One of the best and worst things about us is that a lot of our techs, to a certain extent, operate for most aspects of their job as independent contractors. So not from a books standpoint, but from what their life is like, they've got their base set of clients where they're always seeing. They've got backup techs for vacations, sick, whatever, and we've got a bench that's large enough that can jump in when needed, but they're really their core group of clients. And they know that if they retain those clients and hold on to those clients, then they're going to continue to do well. One of the things that is interesting about how we operate, and one of the things that we aren't really ashamed of by any means, is that we're not the cheapest ACN in town. I think we're probably the most expensive, to be honest. But part of that is we pay our people really well. We give them as many benefits as humanly possible. Our healthcare coverage is really great, considering we're such a small organization. We try and do things that are meaningful and operate as a team, but also give everybody enough flexibility to not necessarily do their own thing, but not have me yelling at them all the time for not doing it this particular way. Good part of that about that is they build their own solutions. We support them as a team. But the bad thing about that is we're not necessarily standardized around any piece of singular hardware. Like, we're not a Meraki-only stack company. We've got Cisco gear, Sonic walls, watch guards, you name it. We've got a ton of different firewalls out there because it fits with what that particular client needs and what that tech can support. So it's a give and take. And, you know, the nice thing is I've been with Foundation for over 5 years, and I think we've hired probably 7 or 8 people in that time. I think we've lost 4 people for different reasons. But one of the, kind of getting back to your question, one of the hardest things for us is we actually opened a San Diego office in October of, what was that, 2014, I think. And we started small. We had one tech. And the reason why we opened in San Diego is that two of my team members, the tech and my main marketing guy, they both had life decisions and they wanted to move to San Diego. Completely random. They didn't move together. They both just decided that San Diego was the place that they wanted to go, and within 2 months of each other. And lo and behold, I was like, all right, well, Jim, our CEO, is okay with it, so let's give it a shot and see what happens. I will tell you, as an ACN who tries to go to a new market, it's really tough. Nobody knew us out there. Growing the business was incredibly hard. And after a year and a half, we were able to hire another tech, but then our main tech, our level 2, level 3 tech, who went out there in the beginning, actually gave us his notice. He was going to move on to a different company. And at that moment, we had a really hard decision to make, which was, can we continue to support our clients with the level one, who's probably 18 months from being a level two, or do we close the office, work with another ACN out there, and find a new solution for the 10-ish clients that we had on retainers out there? And we actually ended up letting go our second field tech out there, shutting down the office from a technical perspective, and handing off our clients to other ACNs and making the transition as easy as possible. It's nothing against the tech that we had. He's a great guy. I would hire him again in a heartbeat if I could, but we just needed the right person from a mentality standpoint as well as a technician standpoint. And, you know, finding a good level two, level three field tech that can also really be an entrepreneur and go out there and get business, that's a hard thing to find. And it was an investment that unfortunately didn't pay off for us. But I'll tell you, we learned a lot in doing it.
Wow. And here I was thinking this business is so portable, you know, because you can work remotely and that, this kind of thing. And, you know, once you've proven yourself. But yeah, I mean, really, like you said earlier, the vast majority of my business comes word of mouth as well, you know, referrals. And so that's, yeah, that's hard to port to a new market. I mean, you've really got to find those few seed clients to start and kind of make a name for yourself all over again. So that's instructive. I think you could maybe save a lot of, you know, ACNs the trouble and heartache of going through that. So hopefully it didn't all go to waste, but that's interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
And one of the things that I think it helped us prove too is, like, our Minneapolis team is incredibly strong. My marketing guy who lives in San Diego is great, and I love him, and he does all sorts of really wonderful work. But at our heart, we're Midwestern, and, you know, we are Minnesotans, and that's our mentality. Living on the West Coast or East Coast, we don't really fit in. Like, we're quiet little introverts that also are super nerdy hipsters. Like, that's our makeup. And on either coast, a lot of times that doesn't fit in with the typical client that we have in Minneapolis. So that's an interesting thing for us. But what I think is also kind of counterintuitive is we've actually been working with a couple of ACNs in different markets because we're 24/7, and some of them have reached out to us based on other relationships, and they're like, hey, I want to offer 24/7 because I have a client that I really want and they require 24/7 and I don't have the staff for it because they're four or five people. So we actually work with those ACNs and say, hey, we can be your 24/7 or your after hours, and we'll bill you for the time we spent in terms of training to get up to speed on your client and then any calls that come in. But what you do in terms of billing that client, that's completely up to you. So some of them are MSPs, and for 24-hour service, they have a higher rate or something like that. So, you know, we're kind of a vessel for them to make more money, which obviously does well for them, and then also kind of helps us expand beyond just Minneapolis. We'll probably never go to another market in terms of a field tech perspective. I think we kind of learned that lesson, but it's an interesting model to start supporting other ACNs out in the community.
Yeah, that's one I've thought about for a while as well. You know, that seems to be a really interesting angle, is to be able to offer that level of support, like you said, especially the after-hour support that a lot of individual ACNs or small organizations can't provide themselves. And, you know, you have the infrastructure to do that. And logistics, how do you, I mean, you can accept phone calls and answer the phone, you know, as if you were representing the, you know, company A kind of thing.
Yeah. So for some of them, they get their own phone number. So we basically get a specific phone number that's dedicated to them. And we know that if a call comes in on that particular line, we know how to answer it. For some of them, it's actually a more transparent experience where they say, hey, we've partnered with this other group to help us with the 24/7. They're called Foundation. They're in Minneapolis. We share documentation. They're smart. Don't worry about it. And then their phone systems are set up to just roll to our main line or our help desk line after hours. So at 6 p.m., somebody in client A in a different city calls in. We answered as Foundation, but they kind of have that expectation that it's not whoever the other ACN is. So we can do it either way.
Very interesting. Well, I think this is a good time to direct listeners to learn more about Foundation. I think a lot of ACNs may be interested in finding out more about that particular service, how that would work. But in general, how can our listeners find out more about your company, Matt?
You can always, if you're on the Slack, the Mac admin Slack group, you can find me at fndtn.mat, I think is my name. I'm not sure. I'm in there somewhere. Otherwise, you can always email me. It's Matt, M-A-T-T, at fndtn.com. And I'm happy to help. I'm very transparent in terms of what we do and how we do it, and happy to help anybody who has questions.
Awesome.
Matt, you've been really, really open and very generous with your time this evening. I love your website as well. It's so different from anything that I've seen. I really encourage listeners just to check it out, and it's really inventive.
Well, thanks. We're trying to think different. I'm just kidding.
Well done. Well done. Excellent. So yeah, thanks again, Matt. It's been a really informative conversation, really interesting to hear about how you guys operate. I was personally very surprised to learn that you don't do any managed services per se. And you know, I think that's a lot of listeners wouldn't expect that from a larger company like yours. So, you know, some of the smaller ACNs will feel in very good company billing hourly. Or do you guys ever call it break fix? I kind of have a vendetta against that term.
So I've gotten into some Slack, I guess, fights about this, but I still see ourselves as a managed service provider, even though we're not fixed rate.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing is essentially managing everything for them. We just bill for it in a different manner.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like I'm in the MSP Slack group and some others that are focused around MSP, and we use similar tools. We have similar mindsets. The verbiage, it's all just marketing anyway. I mean, it's ones and zeros when you come down to it. It's just people calling it different things.
Agreed. Yeah, I always thought it was more of a term that seemed to describe the way services were sort of rendered, not so much the way things are billed necessarily, but it seems to be conflated. But a couple other people have pointed that out, that you can offer managed services without billing that way necessarily. So I think you guys are the perfect case study in that. So awesome. Well, great talking to you, Matt, again from Foundation, fndtn.com. Check out the website, and this has been great. I look forward to talking again in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.